There's a hunger in my heart, a hunger in my soul for you. It grows and it grows.
All right. So this is the West Coast Project podcast for The Affair, but I have a couple people on the line. Michelle, you and I do The Affair. So hi, Michelle.
Hey, Mike.
But we also have Jamie with us. Jamie and I do The Americans. Hey, Jamie.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, so this is our little side project for the... It's going to be attached to The Affair because it's kind of related to The Affair with this whole Rashomon effect. But our idea is I've done podcasts with you, Michelle, and I. Michelle and I have done one. Jamie and I have done one, and now Michelle and Jamie, you guys are going to do one. So this is the third podcast for that project.
Okay, Jamie, how long has it been since you've actually seen this? I saw it. I've only seen it once because I had to rent it, like, you know, through Amazon. So I've only seen it once, and it was about 10 days ago, and I've went over it a few times, and I've got it in my mind. Did you see it more than once?
I did. I actually watched it for the second time today.
Oh, okay, good.
And so, yeah, I just wanted to try to get to kind of wrap my head around it because it's a complex little story.
It really is. It's a movie that was set back in the 1950s, maybe 1950, early 1950s, and it's generally just a story. It's Asian. I think it's from China, correct? And it's
Japan.
You're right. Japan. Oh, my bad. Sorry. And it's it's four different accounts of the same murder or tragedy, certainly, that took place, and different people's tale on what happened, and that kind of sets us up for the plot and what it was. What did you think? What was your overall thought of the movie? Did you like it?
Well, I really didn't. Which is it? I mentioned to Mike that it was surprising to me that I didn't like it. I went into the movie knowing that that who the director was, and I was expecting to really love it because I've seen one of his movies, and it was Seven Samurai, and I adored it. I loved it. It's one of my favorite movies of all time.
Oh, wow.
And I didn't know what to expect from this one. And so I guess I was thinking it might have had some more humor in it, or maybe it would be kind of along the same lines. I didn't do very much reading to prepare myself for watching the movie. And
yeah.
So, you know, it just kind of, it was difficult to watch because the subject matter was disturbing. And then of course, you know, it's a genre. And so, you know, having genre movies that are sort of not from your own cultural background are a little bit more difficult to understand, I think. And so there was a little bit of that for me as
yeah.
well.
I actually couldn't agree with you more. I had read only the reviews of it, and there were so many reviews, and the ones that I read were so positive. And I was telling Mike, my husband, this is really his forte. He loves older movies. He loves black and white movies. He loves period movies. He loves, you know, all of this, and he watched 20 minutes of it and said, I'm out, you know, and I was like, oh, please finish this with me. He's like, no. So, I was really surprised by how much I didn't like it either. I thought I would like it too. So, and I agree with you on a whole lot of what you just said. Anyway, we'll just kind of get into it. It's a woodcutter and, some kind of a religious figure, and they're in a ruin of maybe some kind of a religious place, and they're kind of, it's the rain, it's just coming down in buckets, and it's kind of set in the story that it's this sad story, and they're really upset over the trial that has went on and the different tales that was told in the trial. The first tale was from the bandit. The bandit saw a man and his wife coming down the road, and he was just completely captivated by her beauty. And he even talks about if the wind hadn't blown a certain way and blown her veil off. So it had like touches of romance. Did you find that? I mean, weird romance, not like how we view romance so much. And
right. Yeah. No, I think it was really romantic. The way that the, and it was weird in a perverse sense, like what you're talking about, because the bandit was certainly, I mean, you know, unsophisticated at the very best, and he was right. An animal at the worst. And, but he had not only a romance, but a kind of a chivalry and a kind of, not chivalry so much as no, maybe like a gentlemanly kind of way about him, because he wanted to rape the woman, but without having to kill her husband. So
right.
You had, even though it was in the worst possible sense, you know, he did have some kind of, manners about him.
Right. There was some kind of something driving his ethics in this that was kind of, I think, like you were saying, hard for us maybe in the culture we're in to follow so much because of his intent. But so anyway, he sees her and he falls for her. He feels like he wants to possess her. He wants to own her. So he lures her husband away into the woods. He ties him up. He went to the wife. He brought the wife to the husband. And once he gets her around the husband, he attacks her. She fought him very, very strongly for the little female that she was, and he liked that about her. He admired her spunk and her fight. He eventually forced himself on her, and I don't know. I think it kind of showed us that she kind of liked that, which was disturbing kind of in a way. And then she said that one of them had to die. So he cut the husband loose and they fought. And the bandit's telling the story to the courts, and he's telling it like with pride that that the husband fought so well. They passed swords 23 times. He's never fought somebody so well, but he eventually defeated him and killed him.
Right. Right.
Did you take anything else from that part of the story?
Well, just the beginning of it, where they were is that Rashomon is a gate, is a city gate, like a dilapidated city gate. The religious figure, the guy, was a priest, the one who was there.
Right.
And the upset that they were feeling, I kind of wondered about that. And I wondered about both of their experiences of it, because when I watched the movie again, I started to wonder about sort of the moral center of the film, if there was one. And I think that there was one, and mm-hmm. it's not the priest. It's it to me, it doesn't seem, after the whole experience of the movie, of watching the whole thing, that it was the priest. It seems to me that it was the woodcutter, and that the priest was a person who, who had his who was renewed by the story.
Yeah,
by what happened.
Absolutely. The priest seemed needy of a good outcome. He was feeling, it seemed like, depressed over. He didn't want to believe the stories he was hearing, and he needed a renewal.
I agree.
In humankind and stuff. Yeah, I definitely didn't see him. I agree with your woodcutter theory about him being, I don't know that he was the good guy. I took the whole thing more as how we as humans kind of maybe tend to tell stories that shed the kindest light on us as possible. Like in the first story with the bandit, he is this fierce fighter, but it's just like you said, he's very noble, And, you know, the wife has a different story that sheds her in a different light. And the woodcutter has a different story. And even the husband, that they all have their own stories that shed them, I think, in the most noble light. And that kind of goes back to the affair, which Mike and I have podcast for this season. That'll only carry you so far. So much of that is okay. But then at some point, you've just really cut yourself off from reality and changed the story. It's not just a matter of perception. I think we kind of see that in a lot of this. Did you think that it was a perception thing with each person, or did you think it was more them just telling their own story?
Well, I mean, I think that one would hope that there would be enough honesty involved in the story that it would be perception, as opposed to them just telling whatever it is that they wanted to. I think those things hopefully are linked. Their perception of what happened, as to their telling of what happened. Mm-hmm. And so I believe, because there's the line in the movie where I think it's the woodcutter who says that people, or it may be that actually, I think it might be the commoner, the guy who happens by there,
right.
Who says that people lie, that it's part of human nature, and that people lie because they can't stand the truth, basically. And they lie, the worst of all, they lie to themselves. And it's because they can't bear, you know, the truth of, I guess, maybe who they are. And so I think that that's, you know, essential to the story. I think that the fact that these people all saw everything from a different point of view it's exactly that's the piece of the package. That's where the line comes mm-hmm. from. That's where, you know, the specialness of this story, the uniqueness of this story, and the reason why it's really an iconic film, as much as I disliked it. the reason it's iconic is because that story is about human nature. And so these people, I believe that they were lying to themselves, at least for the most part.
I can see
and
that.
And so also lying.
Yeah, I just think when it comes down to actually who sunk the knife into the guy, you know, I mean, they would have to know. They would have to know the truth, I would think, even if they're telling themselves something different. No?
Maybe. I don't know. Because, okay, like, let's say it's the wife, right?
Right.
She kind of blacked out. So she says she had it. And I think it's probably most believable that it could have been her. And, you know, but who knows? Because the actual fact of the story, the truth doesn't matter. What matters in this story is really the untruth. But what's interesting to me is that, you know, she had the dagger in her hand and then passed out and then woke up later and found the dagger in her husband's chest.
Right.
And then blacked out and then woke up again later, you know, at the shore of the river, I think it is, that where she was standing. And so, I don't know. It's kind of hard for me to imagine that she passed out and then blacked out and, you know, all of a sudden her husband's dead by a weapon she had in her hand.
Well, right. Well, absolutely. But this is by her story. You know, the other story was completely right. different. The bandit just said that he right. stabbed him. I mean, one of those is obviously not true. You know, I mean, one of them's not true. We don't know maybe right. which one, but yeah, just to quickly get into the wife, since we've kind of touched on it, her story was the bandit took her to her husband, forced himself on her. She felt terrible. She crawls to her husband. Let me ask you something, female to female. Did her screeching not drive you crazy, or did it?
Drove me crazy.
I was going nuts. I was just like, I can't listen to this. Okay, anyway. And it was just like she just screamed the whole time. I couldn't stand it. But anyway, he took her to her husband who was tied up. He forced himself on her. She crawls to her husband and her husband has this look of revulsion and loathing on his face toward his wife. Right. And she can't, right. you know, she tries to talk him out of it. You know, she's like, oh, please, you know, whatever. And, but he didn't have any, she's dirty to him now, which,
right.
you know, watching that as a female, that's hard. Don't you think? Don't you think it's a hard thing to see?
It was unbearable.
I thought so too.
I found it so uncomfortable, and I told this to Mike. It's just so difficult to watch that, and it seemed like that moment was really, you know, I could really empathize with that character, even though I didn't like her at all, and I found her difficult to look at even. But in those moments where she was, you know, she was trying to get him to look at her or to not look at her with that look on his face, I could completely understand that feeling.
I completely agree with everything you're saying about that. But then, just like you said, she like flips out, she loses her mind, she starts coming toward him with a dagger, and then she, you know, passes out and wakes up somewhere else, and he has the dagger in his chest, and I honestly thought, I believe I said when I was talking with Mike about it, I thought that it was showing that he had killed himself there. Mike disagreed. Mike thought it was insinuating anyway that she had killed him. But mm-hmm. I didn't necessarily take that she had done it, because, I mean, it like showed her, you know, swoon. She fainted, and I didn't even think about her having done it at that point. I didn't take it as a blackout. I took it as a literal pass out where she couldn't possibly have done it. But you took it the same way Mike did, that she did it, correct?
Yeah, I think it's the most likely scenario.
Okay. I just wasn't sure. I just didn't, that didn't even dawn on me as I watched it, but I knew that Mike had said the same thing when we were talking about it. Okay, so then we go to the dead husband's story, which is being told through the medium of some kind. Yeah. What did you think about that scene?
Oh, well, I was really enthralled by the portrayal of the character through the medium. I thought that the way that her voice was made to sound, it was just really, it was like horror movie style scary. It was really, really frightening on a visceral level. And, I thought it was captivating and ingenious, really. In, you know, a time where there are not a lot of special effects, that was a fantastic special effect, and it was so effective. It was frightening, and it really kind of put me in that mind, that space, mental space of trying, of really imagining the dead samurai really wanting to communicate. And it started me thinking about the Japanese notions of death and where was he, and, you know, what was that black space that he was talking about, the blackness that he was enveloped in, you know, what was it like? Was it cold? And I mean, it was really effective, part of the movie
acting
for me.
Yeah, I agree with that. The I thought it was so bizarre. It was something I was not expecting at all in this movie. So it was bizarre and it took me off guard. But as the medium was telling the story, I tended to buy that it was the husband, the dead husband, telling the story, which was really an odd thing considering, like you were saying, the lack of special effect or whatever. It was like with the voice inflection and the change and all that, I completely agree. It was like they did a good job at portraying that was the dead husband speaking. I completely agree with you.
And what's you know, kind of fascinating to me, that like the thing that really kind of strikes me is that there was nothing particularly spooky beyond the acting and the sound of the voice. There was no special atmosphere there that was like, there was no like dark room or smoke or, you know, mm-hmm. eerie music in that moment. It was acting and it was the voice, and that was it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was effective in conveying what it, I think it meant to convey anyway. It certainly conveyed a message to me. So in the dead husband's story that's told through the medium, he was tied up. The bandit brought the wife in front of him and had his way with her. He then asked the wife what she wanted her to do. The bandit did. He's goading her because she'd now been with two men. And she said she'd go with him, but he had to kill her husband. This is when the wife starts screaming, just maniacally screaming again and again to kill her husband. And the bandit was disgusted with her and her behavior. He threw her down on the ground, and he essentially puts her life in her husband's hands. And she gets up, she runs away, and the husband kills himself. So...
Yes. Well, that's what that, yeah.
Why did you see it differently?
I don't know. Well, I mean, no, I didn't. I found parts of the movie confusing, and I think partly because I had to really work to pay close attention to it in some areas because I didn't like it. And so this stuff doesn't seem really clear to me. I think because I wasn't, like, it didn't really sink in while I was trying to watch it.
Well, I honestly had a hard time too. Yeah, I know. I completely get that. But I think it's, again, this is the second time that, you know, it's shown disgust with the female. Now, this time it was by the bandit, and it was because she wanted her husband dead at that point. And, but it was just a lot. It was like a lot placed on her based on the fact that she had no control over any of this situation. A lot of the, I don't know if it's blame, but a lot of the shame placed on her. Of course, you know, screaming, kill your husband, why, you probably should be shamed, I would think. I don't know. It was just, I don't know. Did you think anything different about that?
Well, I will tell you that before I saw the movie, I watched it on Hulu Plus, and Hulu Plus includes an interview with Robert Altman, the director, who talks about the director and about the movie. And one thing that he mentioned that I would never have thought of without him mentioning it is that these kinds of movies, like samurai movies in Japan, are a genre like cowboy movies are here in the West. And so without the cultural reference that is provided by growing up as a part of a society, like if a person is born and raised in Japan or grows up in Japan, they have a kind of a reference for the film itself that we are deprived of. And, you know, I have to wonder because, you know, this movie is not a period movie. It is a movie that was made in a certain time frame. And so what I mean is it's not a modern movie made to look like it was made in the 50s. It was made in the 50s. And, you know, the cultural mores and stereotypes and subscriptions that people have, you know, are true of that time period. And I think that they would be reflected truthfully in the acting and in the storytelling. And I wonder if a part of that hostility toward the woman and blame on the woman as part of the sexism that was really global, you know, at the time. Most societies, had that sort of oppressive view of women and the puritanical view of women's purity and that kind of thing. And, you know, so I wonder if that's not a part of it. But it was distasteful to me regardless, in any light. But I do wonder about what we don't read, emotionally pick up on while we're watching this that's there, that somebody with the ability to reference it culturally, that they might say, okay, well, yeah, that's part of this thing.
Well, that's really interesting. I hadn't thought about it like that, but that's really interesting that you bring that up. It was filmed in the 1950s, but it was set like in the 1500s. Isn't that correct? So we have all of that too. So
yeah,
all the differences and in that, and I do think that's interesting that you bring up about the people who are raised in that culture and the things that they would understand more than we would, not being raised in the culture. But I think that's one of the things that made the movie so difficult for me. Mike was reading a bunch of different stuff about, well, the writer, the director, or someone had said this about the movie and this about the movie, and that made this really interesting to me. And I said, but how many people go into a movie knowing that stuff? The movie, while that helps make a great movie better, in my opinion, I think a movie has to stand on its own. And I didn't think this movie withstood the test of time, personally.
Well, no, I mean, it couldn't have. And actually, it makes me wonder about, its entree into Western culture as far as Japanese film goes, because this was the groundbreaking Japanese film that introduced Japanese filmmaking to the world. I mean, this is it. And so it's kind of an interesting thing because, certainly the world was a much vaster and more pocketed place and more veiled place, back in the 1950s before we had the internet and, toll-free calling and, video everywhere and, sure. And language everywhere. And so, I kind of wonder about how accessible it was to a Western audience, could they relate to it based on our old black and white Westerns that are now becoming even culturally less significant to us because of the distance, the time that right. has elapsed between, and the culture changes. And so I don't know, but I agree with you. I don't know how people walked in there and saw that. And, unless it was something like, seeing the movie The Matrix, where that was just a groundbreaking film, no matter whether you spoke English or not, no matter whether you could relate to the idea of The Matrix or not, everyone who saw that film was blown away. And I
think
wonder
we're
if
too nice, Jamie. Yeah. You and I are too nice. We're just too we are. Come on, let's just admit it. I've been accused of it before. You can admit it too. We're too nice. It was horrible. All right. It was horrible. I wanted to beat my head. And I never say this about anything, but I wanted to beat my head on the table watching this. It was hard to watch. I know. I actually kept writing down, Mike, why do you hate me, as I was taking notes of it and stuff, because it was just so hard to watch. It was just not good. It didn't entertain me. It didn't necessarily enlighten me on anything. I just, it was a story, and the story wasn't a bad story, but it was so overacted, as were most movies in the 50s. That was a common thing, but oh my gosh, and the screeching and the screaming, and then I had to even read it. I couldn't even glance away, and it was, I don't know, I just,
I just didn't,
it was a train wreck, and I just wasn't allowed to look away from it for a second, so I don't know, I just, it was definitely one of my, and I've done some least favorite podcasts, I promise you, but this was definitely in the top. Well, one. So, and I can't believe I'm doing it again. But that's okay. So hopefully I have to be real, because otherwise Mike's going to put up the other podcast that I did with him, and I'm going to be going, oh, I hated it. I'm going to get on here. I'm going to be so nice. And you and I are kind of talking, and I hated it. I'm sorry. I never say that, but I just really disliked it. I thought it was a real long-winded way of trying to show us something that could have been told with, what I would view as more finesse, maybe. And there again, I think that is a time bracket thing. But it certainly wasn't my favorite. Okay, the last view that we had was the woodcutter. And he had said that he had found the body, but then we find out that he had not actually found the body, that he just didn't want to get involved, is what his story was. He found the wife's hat. He heard her crying. He saw that the husband was still tied up. The bandit is a completely different person in the woodcutter story. He's begging the wife for her forgiveness, begging her to be with him. He wants to marry her. And then he's kind of threatening to her, if you say no, I'll have to kill you. And the bandit gets angry, starts screaming at her. He wants her to stop being upset. I mean, after all, he just raped her. You know, what's the big deal? And say she'll, that's sarcasm, and say she'll marry him. And this is where she goes into the fact, she says, you know, a woman has no voice. And she cuts her husband loose. Her husband won't fight for her. And this ticks her off. It's like the husband doesn't like her in any of the stories that we hear. The husband doesn't like her anymore. And I'm like, if you really want to get down to it, he's the one that didn't protect her. And then he doesn't like her after this happens. And it was offensive.
I think that's part of why he was portrayed in the way that he was in all of the stories. Because, you know, he was not a victim, but he was a weakling.
Yeah, you know? Certainly duped, if not physically, depending on whose story you buy. He was certainly duped and outsmarted and shown as a weakling that way by everybody's account, because he's led away and tied up.
Right. Right.
So anyway, he won't fight for her. It makes her so mad. Her husband tells her that she's now been with two men and she should kill herself, and he'd rather lose her than his horse. I mean, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
That was another hard one, right?
Is a real affront to femininity, to women, to womanhood. And that kind of stuff is really, really, really hard to watch. And I don't know that, you know, any unoppressed member of a social class would ever really be able to relate to that. But I think that the way that the woman was portrayed in this movie has a great deal to do with my dislike of it.
It was part of mine. I'm not gonna, you know, soft soap it in any way, but it was definitely part of mine, because not much really gets to me over stuff like that, honestly. But that really probably, and the more I've thought about it over the last week or so, the more I've thought about the way the wife was treated, I just take huge offense to it. I didn't like her either. I didn't like her. I don't believe her. Don't believe what she's saying. But the way the whole story paints her was offensive to me as a female.
And I
just don't get like that a lot. So I'm kind of surprised that this movie did bring up that much emotion in me. Okay, we see that the bandit decides that he doesn't want her either. Once the husband doesn't want her, you know, it's another smack to her. The husband tells her to stop crying. The bandit says, don't bully her. Women are weak by nature. And then she starts to do that cackle thing. She just does this really wild cackle. She says that they're not real men. She had wanted the bandit to save her. A woman wants a man who loves her passionately and who's willing to fight for her. And then for whatever reason, you know, I guess maybe based on what she said, they start the most pathetic of all the sword fights.
Right. Which makes me think it was probably the one that was the most true.
Exactly. Exactly. And it was also told by the woodcutter who... he didn't have any dog in that fight. You know, there was no reason to for him to have told it differently, right?
Right, right, exactly.
So, but that fight, it went on and on and on, and it was just so silly, right? just right, the whole yeah, of it. I mean, it was embarrassing. It was bumbling.
Yep.
And yeah.
Which kind of makes you feel like that maybe that really, really was, you know, the most true, because, you know, swashbuckling is not the way that fights happen. It's, you know, it's usually scruffing and, you know, in the ground and, you know, flipping around in the mud and somebody tries to run away and, you know, that kind of, so that's what's most real.
Oh, I know. Well, yeah. Well, right. But this was almost like a, you know, like, two 5-year-olds that are right. given. I mean, it was just so ridiculous. But in this story, the bandit won, and then he goes to the wife and tries to get her, but she runs away. So then we're back at the what did you call it again? The religious.
Oh, the priest. Or the city gates?
Yes, yes. We're back at the city gates, and there's a baby crying. Mm-hmm. And so the men, they're telling the story. The man that was listening to the story, the bystander that comes by, he goes and he takes the kimono off the baby and goes to, like, steal the baby's warmth, right?
Right.
And the woodcutter goes up to him and the priest, and he scolds him, and but the guy doesn't care. He takes it anyway. Mm-hmm. So what did you think about that scene?
Well, I think that the commoner represented human nature in a lot of ways. You know, he's very kind of, he's another one of these basic characters that didn't really have a lot of you know, surface, superficial depth, but who spoke, you know, truths. And, you know, I think that, that he was necessary because he provided the, you know, he provided the opportunity for the woodcutter to become sort of the hero. So he was that balance, I guess, you know, that was necessary in the scene. But yeah, he represented human nature and he spoke the truth about human nature. And he said, you know, if I don't take this, somebody will. So why won't it be me? Why can't it be me? You know, and which is a horrible thing.
And off of the little right. baby that was left so there. Awful. I mean, it was like, geez, so that just told such a tale of human nature.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sorry about that, Michelle.
No, what?
Oh, okay. I thought you could hear there was a sound.
Oh, no.
We'll have to edit that out. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's fine. No, I didn't hear anything.
Okay. Yeah, no, so, it was my phone. It was my phone ringing, so I apologize.
Oh, no problem. Yeah. I didn't hear it at all.
Okay,
so let me see if I can...
Yeah, we were okay. talking about the again, I have to apologize.
No, that's all. Yeah, that? I actually heard it this time. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I apologize. All right. So we were talking about the commoner and him stealing the kimono from the baby, from the orphaned baby.
The orphan infant. Yeah.
Yes. completely defenseless infant. But okay, so tell me if I saw this correctly, was the priest about to throw that baby off the building?
Oh my gosh, I didn't see that. I don't know.
Okay, because the woodcutter stops him. The woodcutter stops him at the end, and he says something like, what does he say? He says something like, don't take the last thing from this baby. Like the last thing, the baby doesn't own anything else but its life is what I assumed that the woodcutter was trying to say. Don't take the last thing from him. And then the woodcutter is about to cry. And he says, you know, that's when he says, I have 6 kids at home. One more won't make a difference.
Right.
And then, right. you know, and then he takes the baby and the priest is, you know, is renewed. through that act of charity on the part of the woodcutter.
Right, right. And this is right after the priest has actually brought up the fact that the woodcutter is the one who stole the dagger, you know, because that was important, too, because he brought up the fact that it was the priest who brought it up, right, because he says that he's evil, too. He says, you stole the pearl inlaid dagger of the wife, and then he wants to know, you know, what... No, it wasn't the priest, it was the commoner, right, that did that, the man.
Right.
Yeah, and then, because then he smacks him in the ear and he walks off with the kimono. See, I thought that was kind of like the moral of the whole story. Then the woodcutter offers to take the baby home and everyone's face restored. I thought that was the whole, that was my take on the movie, having not read any of the director's, you know, cuts or anything like that, was that we all maybe have the propensity to do bad, but we can do good things too. And I thought it was something that simple, that, or maybe I'm just simple-minded, but that's what I took out of it. It was like, here, yes, you've obviously done a bad thing. You lied about the story to the court. You took the dagger. You've probably sold the dagger, but look at what a good person you actually are in another sense. And I thought that that was kind of what they were trying to say about everybody. It was like, okay, the bandit had his bad, you know, traits, but he probably had a good side too. And maybe the same with the wife and the husband and all of them. But like I said, that could have just been my simple mind on it. And
no,
having,
I think that was a great take on it. I think that you had a really great take on it. I think that the only thing maybe that I would add is that I think that what I took away from it, the last portion of what I understood from the movie, is that, you know, even though, you know, there's a character and maybe a prototype of a person who is really, really deeply very good and very, very self-sacrificing and empathetic to almost a fault, even that person has the capability of being immoral and of seeing things in a way that romanticizes their own position and their own point of view.
Do you think he saw it that way, or do you think that's just the story he told? Do you think he really saw it that way? I don't either.
I don't know, but I think it's interesting that question has come up again, because you asked me that question earlier, and I tried to answer it, and I don't know that I've been effective in understanding it or answering it well either way. And isn't that probably the point?
Yeah, it probably is. I think you're right, and I do think you've answered. I think you've done a great job. As a matter of fact, I think we've both done just quite the job on this story. But I do think that's kind of a how you look at it thing, how you view it, and I'm sure that they wanted us to take a lot of that out of it. I think it could have been done. You know, not that I could have done better, but I've seen better, and you know, therefore it wasn't, again, necessarily one of my top movies at all. But was there anything else that you wanted to talk about it?
No, not really.
No.
And I don't run out of things to say, but this one I'm just done. I'm done with this one.
Yeah. Well, can I just say that this has been really fun, and I hope that we get a chance to maybe podcast something else sometimes, because it's really good to have a girl's take on it. Mike and I kind of bickered back and forth the whole time, and I think it's been really fun that that you and I did agree on so much of it anyway. And thank you again for doing the affair, because I don't really see that this is very similar, other than just different points of view, but it's always great to have an extra point of view on it, and I really appreciate it. It's been a lot of fun for me, Jamie.
It's been fun for me, too. Thanks, Michelle. It's been so great, and I really do. I'd love to do a podcast with you.
Okay, great.
Awesome.
And is Mike, are you going to come back on the line with us, or?
All right, you guys, 100% on Rotten Tomatoes, just saying.
It's called Rotten Tomatoes for a reason. Sorry, Mike.
Brilliant minds think alike.
You guys did a great job. No, you guys did a great job. I'm actually really happy that you both have the same opinion of the movie, even though we have differing opinions, because, I don't know, it validates everybody's point of view. And I'm really glad that both of you stood up and said, well, I don't have a clue in the world why you like this movie, Mike, but I don't like it at all. I really do think that's good. It's interesting. It makes it more interesting to talk about.
Yeah.
Well, awesome.
I don't know. This was a rough one. This was a rough one, Mike.
It was a rough one.
Mm-hmm. We get to pick the next one. It's going to have bows and, you know, stuff like that.
And absolutely. Romantic music.
All right, then you can have me as a guest on your podcast.
I don't know. I think we're owed. We're owed.
Well, I think so. And I think, mm-hmm. Mike, I think you better not make both your girls mad. I don't think that'd be good.
Yeah, come on, Mike.
All right. Well, you did a great job, and it was like 48 minutes right at this point. So perfect. Awesome. And it was interesting. So thanks again.
Okay, good. Thanks again, Jamie. Okay.
Thanks, Michelle. Bye.
All right, y'all. Bye-bye.